Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Gigabit Nation, Broadband Talk Radio. We're here every week helping private, public, and nonprofit organizations get broadband everywhere it needs to be. We're today are going to talk about broadband and economic development. I think we have highlighted this issue over the months, and I think clearly anyone who's involved in broadband understands that there is a major interest in using these networks now as an economic engine of one sort or another. So today our guest is former mayor of Danville, Virginia, Linwood Wright, and he was in Danville and engaged when their network project started. And generally, I'm going to not steal his thunder, but I'm going to we're going to focus a lot on what were the economic conditions then, and then how broadband has improved those. So, Linwood, Mr. Wright, welcome to the show. Glad to have you on board.
Well, thank you. I am certainly happy to be here and happy to discuss a subject that is near and dear to my heart.
There you go. You are a true believer from everything I've been able to read and find out. So let's get on with it. So in my background, just digging up information about Danville, it seems like at the beginning of the, I guess, the century, as it were, in 2000, 2001, economically things were a little bit rough for Danville, and it seemed like for the state in general. But give us a picture of what you had to deal with at that point in time, and then maybe go from that to how that need translated into this desire to put a broadband network in place.
Well, to describe conditions in Danville at the turn of the century as a little bit rough is certainly a gross understatement.
Wow.
The economy of Danville had historically been based on two industries, textile manufacturing and tobacco processing. Both of those industries were being severely impacted by globalization, and we realized in late 1999, actually, between Christmas and New Year's, a small group of us gathered and discussed what the future of the city looked like, and we agreed that unless we did something differently than we had been doing, we were in for a very, very rough ride. Unfortunately, obviously, it turned out to be true that we have ultimately lost entirely the textile industry here. And the tobacco industry is only a tiny fraction of what it once was in the city of Danville. The job losses are in the thousands. Probably at that time, the losses have been order of magnitude 5,000 jobs in a city of roughly 45,000 people. So it was a huge blow to the city. We felt that an information network was the most essential thing that we could find to give ourselves some infrastructural basis for economic improvement in Danville. We do not have an interstate highway that bisects the city, but we knew that if we could get an information interstate, we might have an opportunity to compete in the 21st century, and we set about getting that in place. We used some technology that had just been developed at Virginia Tech, did a beta site line or fiber network, about 30 miles long, and were extremely impressed with the results of that trial, and frankly, the rest is history. We've been able to do a pretty decent job of building information information network infrastructure in the community, and I'll let you pull that out of me as we go along.
Okay, no, that sounds good. Now, when the initial call it pilot project started, was that being driven by the IT side, by the utility, or was it economic development? Who was taking that? I mean, I know it was with the university, but from a city perspective or a municipal perspective, who were the players involved?
The city was not involved in that. That was purely a private sector effort.
Oh, okay, I got you.
A group of seven of us, and at that point I had completed what I thought was my tour of duty with the city, had opted not to run for re-election in 1998, so I was a private citizen at that point in time. Six others came together. There were a total of seven of us at that time who started meeting and talking about what we could do to benefit the economic development of the city. And out of that conversation came the decision to try to do something about showing the value of the Virginia Tech University technology. And we used primarily private sector funds for that effort.
Mm-hmm. And so in a project like that where you're sort of doing a test, what were the expected outcomes? Or were there expected outcomes?
Yeah. What we wanted to see was whether this idea of multiple service access points on a fiber network would in fact work, and they did. And we were able to get them on the network at relatively low cost, significantly less than what was then the existing technology. That enabled us to get the city interested and also to get the Virginia Tobacco Commission interested. And the Virginia Tobacco Commission has been the primary benefactor for the larger scale network that we have in place across the entire southern tier of the Commonwealth of Virginia, from the coast, from the Hampton Roads region, over to the far southwest part of the state. And that interconnects along the way with major north-south trunk lines.
Mm-hmm.
The city decided that it wanted to use the technology, and we certainly supported that effort and gave them, we think, significant political cover to make it happen, to link all city facilities and public schools, and We got outside the city limits and got into the county as a part of that network, and it's worked well. We've been able to get good communication amongst the city's facilities and the schools. That has naturally led to the provision of such services for industrial sites.
Was there much opposition at the time, at least to the city's part of the effort?
Not significant. In these kinds of efforts, we probably tend to plow through some minor opposition, ignore it if we can. That's probably not a politically sound way to do it, but it works here. And we were not spending tremendous amounts of city funds or suggesting that they be spent. And we were really about trying to prove a concept, and knew that if we could prove the concept and if we could build a good intra-city network, it would have tremendous value going forward.
Okay. Now that
there was certainly no organized opposition. Let me express it that way.
Right. Okay. And I guess with all, I'm assuming now with all of the economic issues at hand, the fact that you weren't spending a lot of money, but there was a desperate need to do something, that those two probably worked hand in hand. Then if it was, you know, the bad economic situation, and then you were going to also ask for, you know, say, you know, $2-3 million. I mean, it seems like he sort of had the, you know, a good, I don't know, combination, if you will, of circumstances.
We were fortunate in that we got this effort started before we lost Dan River, Inc., the big textile manufacturer. We saw it coming. That did not actually happen. until about 2006.
Oh, okay. So you had a bit of cushion time, sort of.
We had a little cushion time, and we were trying to be proactive.
Mm-hmm.
And in hindsight, I think that was a wise decision.
Right. I would guess that. Sorry, I don't mean to step in, but I'm guessing that with the focus on the intranet aspect of it, which a number of both my readers and listeners have talked about over the months, having an intranet is often a strong starting point because it's easy to rally support of the community around it, because the bottom line is that you're making government, or I guess in this case, the public utility, more efficient as a result of putting that technology into place.
That was extremely well said, Greg.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. But it's a constant theme. I mean, I've had time to talk to people to actually get to that conclusion, but it seems like, that was a point. Now, in today's, economy and issues, do you think the same argument still holds? In other words, if a city came to you and said, we want to do what you guys did, should we also go look at, the intranet as the first step or the foundation to building this infrastructure?
We have recommended that to a local community recently who came to see us,
mm-hmm.
see what we had done. Yes, I think as difficult as it may be, it is still darn good advice.
Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
It's good data interchange,
mm-hmm.
is absolutely essential in today's economy. Without it, I think a community is just almost dead.
Now, how do you start to develop the economic development goals? If we look at the transition, the network started as a city infrastructure. It moved from city government facilities to wiring the schools. Again, a logical progression. But at some point, is there a specific set of activities that says, let's turn this into an economic development engine, or with Danville, does that happen by accident more than design?
Now, that very definitely happened by design.
Okay.
It was apparent to us that the value of the information infrastructure was very real. We talked to company prospects, companies who were looking at possibly relocating to Danville, and they confirmed their interest in having good, economically attractive communication infrastructure available, and it didn't take a particularly large leap of faith to get our industrial parks all connected via the local network, which we call, incidentally, in Danville.
Mm-hmm. Now, as this was coming together, what were the options for businesses? You mentioned, I think, at one point that the build out was less expensive than the alternative when you were doing the pilot project. But what exactly, from a business perspective, what were their options?
Their options were traditional large suppliers of internet connectivity. I'm trying to find a way to describe this without getting too specific with trade names.
We understand.
the big guys, the major telephone suppliers, the
mm-hmm.
major cable providers were here.
Mm-hmm.
They were more concerned, as they should be, not being at all critical of this, but they were more concerned with their earnings situation than they were with helping a community that was hard hit
mm-hmm.
To start to recover from the economic downturn.
Mm-hmm. Now, in that environment, how well received were your services when they were introduced to the business community there?
Extremely well received. It has been almost expressions of gratitude for our having done this. The business community is saying, we appreciate it, we want to take advantage of it, it's valuable to us. Some of the things that have happened as a result of having this infrastructure, we now have in the city of Danville a pretty major installation of a Cray XMT2 computer.
Mm-hmm.
Current state-of-the-art of supercomputers for graph analytics, operated by a think tank that has traditionally been located in Northern Virginia. They're able to move their information across the Internet using in Danville fiber and the Mid-Atlantic broadband infrastructure at a more competitively attractive cost than they could from their traditional location in Northern Virginia.
Mm-hmm. So there's definitely warm reception for the technology, which makes a lot of sense, and it again very consistent with what we see in other communities. Now, I know that you don't get deep into the technology side, I mean you personally, but where does wireless fit into the equation, or how does it fit into the equation?
I don't get deeply enough into the technology to really be able to answer that question. As a gross, overly simplified statement, I think wireless compared to the fiber network that we're using, it's simply too slow. Can't get the speeds. Can't get the bandwidth. That is my understanding.
Right. But I would assume that, I sort of look at there's two sides of the equation. I mean, you have your like your data centers and so forth that are using a tremendous amount of bandwidth, which makes sense. But I know that a number of cities, towns have used wireless as part of the equation to either reach hard to reach communities, or they use it to stimulate the downtown economy by putting hot zones throughout the area.
We are doing that.
Oh, so you are doing that. Okay.
We are doing that.
Now, do the retail stores and so forth? I mean, is that something that they are in tune with? Do they see an impact, on their business as a result of this?
I am not aware that the Wi-Fi zones have had tremendous impact on. Commercial development in the center of the city.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that they haven't, but I am not aware that they have.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I should probably backtrack at this point a little bit. The network that you guys have built is an open access network, but you don't provide the actual retail services, right?
That is correct.
Okay. Do you have any focus on the residential side?
Not yet. We are beginning. That is in the very early stages of development, beginning to investigate and do some beta test development to expand our services to residential areas. Again, not doing the last mile, I think, is the term of art.
Mm-hmm.
But to get the network on the city utility system along the streets in residential areas so that private suppliers can, in fact, offer the service via contract with the city to residential consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Hope that made some sense.
Yeah, it's a graduated process of bringing in third-party providers to deliver the service, and I would assume, or maybe I shouldn't assume, that people will or ISPs will be brought in based in some part on the needs that have been identified. For example, you know, you have certain industrial parks, right? They demand a certain type of service. Residential clearly demands a different type of service. All obviously can be delivered over the same core infrastructure, but at the doorstep, you know, it may look a little different in terms of who's providing that. And now, one of the reasons that we typically see this happen, you know, where the city will build the core infrastructure and then they bring on third parties, if you will, or ISPs to deliver the service. Are you familiar with how that process is going? In other words, what kinds of providers have stepped up to be providing services on your network? You know, are there consumer-oriented ISPs? Are they smaller? Do they tend to be just the larger companies?
Right now, they tend to be smaller, locally owned.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you do specific, marketing or promotion to that group? And I bring this question up because a number of communities that I've talked to are experiencing some difficulty getting third parties to come in and provide service for a number of reasons. And I'm just wondering, you know, what you have seen as far as, you know, either a willingness or a reluctance on the part of providers to be part of your network.
To the best of my knowledge, we have not experienced that reluctance. I think it may be a little early in the local situation to judge that accurately.
And then also figure out what the respective ISP's business models are going to be and so forth.
So yeah, I just think it's a little too early to really have a handle on that.
Gotcha. Now, in terms of successes, I've written about a couple, but, you know, better to hear it straight from the source. What have been some of your biggest economic development wins as a result of this network?
Well, I think the Cray Computer is certainly the one that I point to as the most dramatic win. Let's describe it that way. We have seen significant influence of the network on smaller businesses, even some startup businesses. One in particular is an aircraft maintenance company that has a significant need for high speed, very reliable network communication with its primary customers, who are airlines.
Mm-hmm.
That company has located here recently, and we're certainly excited to have them here, and they seem to be very excited with the service that they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And say that they are almost shocked at the speed that they can transmit data.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the discussions that happens in some economic development professional circles is the question of, are the initial efforts of the network, should they go toward current businesses, or should they go toward drawing in new businesses that might bring, you know, with each new business a, you know, large number of jobs, say 100 or 500 or something like that. From your experience, you know, where's the balance point? You know, do you give equal time to both efforts? Do you, you know, focus heavily on one at the beginning and then the second on the, you know, down the road a piece? Where do you see this kind of balancing out?
I have a hard time really making that distinction in value to an existing business versus a newcomer business.
Mm-hmm.
We all have seen the numbers and understand that more economic development occurs from existing business than from brand new business.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly the rule of thumb amongst economic developers. But if the network makes sense for a business, it makes little difference whether that business is new or old. And I'm not aware of many businesses today that don't need more and more information communication capacity. So
mm-hmm.
I just don't see much likelihood that there will be significant differences between value to existing business versus value to a new business. We don't make a conscious effort to distinguish between those two categories.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it'll be interesting, I guess, to see how this this plays out. I know that in certain rural communities, like for example, I was talking to people in Wisconsin, a really small town of 4,000 or 5,000 in Wisconsin. And they, for the most part, feel that they are happy, obviously, to have any large company that would consider relocating there, but their steady economic improvement has come from supporting businesses that may only represent 5 or 6 or 10 jobs per business. And as each one of those adds a couple of people here, a couple of people there, it has a significant impact on the local economy. So I guess it's sort of in a scaled-down environment. People say, well, you know, if you get the network to encourage someone to start a business and 5 or 8 people get jobs as a result of that, that's a big win for a small town.
Absolutely. And I think we are all experiencing, I think the nation is experiencing more small growth from small businesses than from the Fortune 50 corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, did you guys have a specific planning exercise just for the economic development aspect?
We have had, yes.
So now, how do those?
And we do.
How do those come together? Like how?
Thing.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
I say it's an ongoing effort.
Ah, okay. Because you know, a lot of the listeners to the show are trying to sort out how do they put together, you know, a planning effort. How do they move the project forward? You know, from your perspective, you know, how do you do that? Who do you call together? Do you have one big long planning session? Do you have a lot of small ones or small, I don't know, subgroups or what have you? Like, to you, what would a typical economic development planning exercise look like to take advantage of broadband?
My advice.
Please,
and it's
definitely.
It's basically what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You are consciously aware of what's going on every day. I do not believe, and I think I speak for the city when I say that there is no set formula to make economic development successful.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very opportunistic business that demands flexibility. The certain infrastructure is absolutely essential. And I consider broadband as essential as electricity, water, wastewater, and natural gas for any business, big or small. We believe that there must be a reasonably good inventory of sites, S-I-T-E-S, available to meet the needs of prospective businesses, again, be they large or be they small, and a lot of thinking outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
We, at one time in the history of Danville, economic development here was a fairly set rigidly format, and times have changed, and that format just doesn't work anymore. So do we have a strategic plan? Yes, but it is very flexible, and it is subject to rapid modification, with the overarching caveat that we must not lose focus.
Mm-hmm.
There are some industries that don't make sense for us, and we need to be careful not to fall in love with something that is not a good fit. If it's not a good fit for the either for the expansion of an existing company or a good fit for the location of a new company, it is not in the best interest of the city to try to market and entice those kinds of prospects to locate here.
Mm-hmm.
This has to be a two-way street. But the presence of excellent data communication is an essential part of being attractive and being a good fit for anything, really.
Do you have examples of what might be, you know, for Danville, understanding? By the way, what's Danville's population?
Danville's population right now is about 44,000.
Oh, okay. So given your economic, you know, situation, circumstances, location, and, you know, population, what kinds of businesses make sense for the city to attract? What kinds don't make sense to attract for you?
The kinds of businesses that make sense for us to try to attract are businesses that can take advantage of our mid East Coast location. It doesn't make sense for us to try to bring companies that are that their product is going to need to be distributed primarily on the West Coast. In the real core regions of the Midwest. Geographic location is a key part of a good fit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to be very careful to bring businesses, or try to bring businesses here, that have a reasonable chance of getting a good labor force. I think the labor force is one of the keys to successful economic development now, and I hear this from more essentially everybody with whom I speak.
Mm-hmm.
What have you got that that your people can realistically do? If we needed, for example, to even in the high tech area, if we needed 500 programmers, it's not likely to be a good fit for us.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if we need 10 programmers, 20 programmers, this could be a very good fit. Again, I think the issue is don't overreach.
Mm-hmm.
What you can realistically expect to achieve.
Okay. I want to take this opportunity to ask if anyone in the audience wants to call in with a question. We're gonna venture down the path of call-in radio here. There's a dial-in number. It's 323-679-0845. So if someone has a question for Mayor Wright, then let's bring those in and let's see what happens. In the meantime, let me also ask a question about the medical segment of your community. One of the things that was explained from the Economic Development Office was that there's a main medical facility there that uses broadband to basically link in community clinics, and I'm assuming also the physicians and doctors and so forth, to in essence create a medical / telemedicine component of the network, and that has been a useful tool in drawing new business. I'm wondering if you can speak to that a little bit.
It has been a very useful tool. It's also interesting that business, from the purely commercial side, was developed by a local physician who also was the first ISP provider. ISP provider. I'm being a little redundant there.
We understand what you meant.
He started my first access to the internet was through his local business.
Mm-hmm.
So he is a network geek in addition to being an outstanding nephrologist.
Mm-hmm.
But the growth of his network using the local network, the N Danville network, and Mid-Atlantic Broadband has been phenomenally successful. That has helped us in recruiting physicians and in expanding the residency program at the local hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, physicians are really a part of the economic engine of any community.
Mm-hmm.
And a strong medical community is one of those things that communities such as ours must have if we're going to attract new businesses.
Mm-hmm. So you see a very definite tie between the two, you know, between a good medical or a good, I don't know, technologically advanced medical community and the ability for that community to do well and to expand?
I definitely do. The presence of a strong medical community is really an essential component of a strong economic community, a community that is economically strong.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the, call it the geography of your area, are most of your residents inside a what I would call a more of an urban setting, or are there a lot of people, I don't know, spread out in sort of the typical rural dispersed manner? Meaning there's not necessarily like people right next to each other. There's distances between homes and families and all of that. How are you set geographically?
Virginia is a very interesting state. I'll give you a little background on local government in Virginia. If you live in a city, you do not live in a county.
Okay.
So
it's neither or.
Virginia has independent cities, only state in the union with that local government structure. Therefore, if you are in the city of Danville, and the utility department is a function of the city of Danville, it's an entity of the city of Danville, you are by definition involved in a in an urban setting. In the Commonwealth of Virginia, we cannot annex huge chunks of county land anymore.
Mm-hmm.
At one time we could, and we did, but no longer. So, yes, Danville is, by definition, an urban area, not an extremely congested urban area, but
mm-hmm.
An urban area nevertheless.
Okay. Now, will the network ever have any impact on the any of the surrounding counties, or will it strictly just be within the city limits of Danville?
It already has some impact on Pennsylvania County, which is the surrounding county, because
mm-hmm.
it does extend into the county, and it is servicing county schools.
Okay. And that's, I don't know, that's all part of the same network build-out, or did they have to?
The same network.
Okay. Interesting.
And the city does supply utility services to a fairly broad swath of the county.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of the county, but a significant part of the county.
Now, was it easy to, as a utility, as a public utility, was it easy to incorporate the business operations of a network? In other words, you know, as a utility, you have, you know, you bill customers, you recruit customers, or you know, you market customers to bring them in, albeit there probably aren't any competitors. But, I mean, you have a customer service process in place. You have a technical support process in place. Were all of those adaptive to having a broadband business, or did you guys have to modify some of the internal structure as a result of the broadband business?
So far as I know, it was relatively easy.
Okay.
Did they have any problems? I'm sure they did. But were they extremely difficult problems? I do not think so.
Okay. Now, were there any particular challenges from an economic development implementation standpoint? Meaning, you know, you sit down to, you know, use this network to have some sort of economic impact. You know, you're going to improve the local business, going to attract new business. You know, we talked about the medical healthcare side of things. But were there particular challenges to the economic development objectives that were set that you guys had to overcome?
Only opportunities.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough. Only opportunities. Well, were there grand opportunities that caused people to stop and ponder as a result as you move this thing forward?
No. It made so much sense. Do we stop and ponder today, this far down the road, how can we better utilize this asset? Yes, we do that. And obviously we should continue to do that. Do we have doubts that this is now proving to be beneficial? No, we don't.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have struggles to make it a more viable possibility? No, we don't. If we ever did, and frankly, I don't think we ever did. I think it just it made so much sense from the start that we were looking for ways to market the asset to make it more meaningful, that we never considered it any kind of an impediment or any kind of untoward difficult operationally.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be that easy to get it expanded into household use? That may be tougher.
How so?
That may be a more difficult marketing thing. People may not be quite as willing to incur the cost. I don't have a good feel for that.
Mm-hmm.
It would not surprise me if it took more effort on the part of the utility department to build a really strong retail customer base through its suppliers. It's one of those things where when you're not doing the last mile of service, you're more dependent on the ISPs, and if their customer service lacks something, if their their service lacks something, the utility department may not be in a position to fix it, but it may get blamed for it.
Mm-hmm.
With an industrial customer, you're dealing with a order of magnitudes fewer people, fewer entities. And you can address issues quickly and work through those.
Mm-hmm.
I think the residential business will prove to be somewhat more of a challenge. It probably is well worth trying to meet that challenge, but my guess is it will be more challenging than the commercial or industrial business has been.
Mm-hmm.
And that is purely a personal opinion.
Right. But you have, perspective, so I think that makes a lot of sense.
I have no idea whether the folks at the utility department would share my belief there, but
mm-hmm.
you've heard my reasons and the basis for my conclusion.
But on the other hand, knowing what I know of other communities' projects, I think that you're right about the fact that if something does go wrong, even if it's an ISP issue, then by virtue of the fact that the city's name is attached to the process, no one doesn't really sort out and say, oh, well, the city's not responsible because they're only the wholesaler. It's more that, this is the city's network, so I'm going to call the city. Yeah, I'm going to call City Hall,
yeah.
Which happens a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so it does present its own particular challenge, no doubt about that.
Where the city can do something, and I would argue that the city's the city utility department's customer service is absolutely outstanding. But there it's got full control.
Mm-hmm.
And I always worry about having full control of something.
Mm-hmm. So in this wholesale model that you folks have, are you spared a lot of competitive issues? In other words, you know, my assumption would be, well, if we the city are the wholesaler, we hold the network, the only competition that's going to happen is going to happen in the last mile space, and that doesn't really affect us because no one's going to build another wholesale network infrastructure. Is that assumption correct, or are there competitive factors that do come into play here?
Well, I'd like to think that we have some protection from hurdles to entry.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice way of saying I think you're right.
Fair enough. That does make a lot of sense. Do you get a lot of calls, by the way? Do people, you know, dial up and say, hey, you know, can you help us figure out some answers to questions here?
Not really. No. One of the ladies in our office probably gets more calls than I do on this particular subject. But the calls I get are usually, hey, do you think we can take advantage of this or that? And I usually can say, yes, I think we can. Let's sit down and figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about managing expectations? There have definitely been some projects that have run into trouble because people expected a lot. I mean, they expected their world to change, and the project team or the office managing the network more fed into that sort of grand expectation as opposed to modified it. You know, in your situation, have you had issues with expectations? Have people wanted more, expected more, or how have you managed to keep expectations under control?
I think we probably have more issues of managing expectations in the overall arena of economic development than we do broadband supply.
Mm-hmm.
The average guy on the street is not that aware or that attuned to the details of broadband. Now, do they expect economic development to literally work miracles? Absolutely they do. How many jobs have you brought me today? Attitude. That's where we really do have to pay particular attention to managing expectations.
Mm-hmm. Are there some specific tactics that you've used to manage those expectations?
We constantly struggle to find better ones. We have begun to pay particular attention to how we make announcements. It's awfully easy, I think, to in making an economic development announcement to offer too much assurance that things are actually going to take place in the next 6 or 8 months and generate, pull a number out, 500 jobs. And things never happen quite as rapidly as we would like to think they will. Therefore, we run into those situations that, the economy turned down a little bit. We didn't anticipate as much difficulty finding financing as we've actually had. All kinds of things slowed us down. We're going to get there, but those are the problems that we have to deal with on an ongoing basis. And if we can control a little bit the enthusiasm at the time of making the announcement, I think we have a lot better shot at keeping expectations under reasonable control.
Well, I think you have tied into something actually quite profound in its simplicity, you know, because interestingly enough, there was a big government announcement last week about an executive order by the president, which would mandate that for government projects that are going to tear up the landscape, you know, dig up trenches or whatever, that conduit would be laid. And the idea being that, you know, if you're building a network from scratch, one of your biggest costs is tearing up streets and sidewalks and all of that. And so if you can eliminate that cost, it has a significant saving. And so the press release comes out, and one of the things in the press release is that this is going to save 90% of the cost of building a network, which is basically the one sentence that more news outlets, probably than anything else, you know, tied into. Whereas, you know, people who are involved with building broadband networks, you know, in the various LinkedIn groups and so forth that I use, were saying that, yes, it will be a significant saving, but I think the PR person got a little overzealous at 90%. And I think that's the point that you're making, is that when government make those announcements.
You don't want to be... to sound pessimistic, you don't want to discourage anybody's enthusiasm. But darn it, there is a limit to what we should be saying, and I don't want anybody to think I'm suggesting that we spin the news or tweak it to the point that it's less than totally accurate. But on the other hand, I think it is just essential that we don't overpromise and underdeliver. It's so much better to underpromise and overdeliver than the opposite. And we need to be sure that we're at least consciously aware of the risk that we may be running in terms of overpromising.
Yes, I will definitely agree with you on that wholeheartedly, and I think that we have seen some of those, you know, time and time again as we've gone through broadband stimulus, and you know, because a lot of the broadband stimulus campaign at the beginning was all about, you know, the economic development impact. And so here we are now 2 years later, and people are saying, well, where are all the jobs? Where are all this? Where's that? You know, and a lot of that comes from that whole expectations management exercise. And so,
and, you know, it may have taken 2 years to get the infrastructure in place. You know, moving infrastructure, and this is so horribly true in rural areas. The density is not there, and that's a place that I think maybe wireless will ultimately provide a good solution. But when you've got houses that are a mile apart, nobody can quite afford the infrastructure. So if we use federal money to get there, short of making it an issue of national security, and I don't think we can show that, it's going to take a while to gradually build it up. I'm old enough to remember how the rural electric co-ops electrified rural America. And that there was still major major electrification of rural America going on well after the close of World War II.
Great. Now, we're going to have to cut you off there. We've come to the end of our show, but this has been excellent conversation, and I want to thank you very much for being our guest today. We'll talk
thank
again
you for
soon.
For recognizing that Danville exists.
Not a problem. You guys exist and are doing well, and we'll keep tabs on you for sure.
Okie dokie.
All right. Take care and have a good day.
Thanks, Greg.
All righty. Bye.